Hello, and welcome to the Adamsons Versus. My name is James Adamson, and you might know myself and my co-host from the famous global phenomenon that is the Double Reel Film Podcast, where we talk about basically the film industry and try and get people to watch different and new films. But we decided that we were going to start a new kind of podcast where we just have a kind of more relaxed chat about just stuff going on in the world, as opposed to just keeping it wholly about kind of films. So this, I'll say hello to my co-host.
Hello, my name is also James Adamson. I'm on the receiving end here. Normally there are the announcements the other way around.
You're on the receiving end. For fuck's sake.
What do you mean?
It didn't sound like that in my head before I said
it. Oh, it sounded like that in everyone else's fucking head.
Okay, my name is James Addison. I am not on the receiving end. You are the audience. You're on the receiving end. Okay, as you can see, audience, the tone of this podcast is slightly more lighthearted and slightly less disciplined than the one in the film podcast that we do. But yes, as James described, we decided that we would like to do another podcast that was a bit more free form, that talks about something that we've seen in the news lately, with a bit of a perhaps an irreverent look at it. And no real script, no real structure. We just start talking about it, see where it takes us, and see where we end up. So this episode is called The Adamsons Versus the Taliban in Pedalos. Now, James, do you want to explain what we're talking about?
Yeah, hold on. In a pedalo or on a pedalo? In, on. You're on a bike, and that has pedals.
Are you in a boat or on a boat?
Yeah, but you don't pedal a boat.
That's true. But you do pedal a pedal boat. This is a conundrum.
But it's not called a pedal boat, it's called a pedalo.
That's right. Although outside of the UK they're called pedal boats.
It's only us
who calls them pedalos.
Ah, fuck them. Yeah, so basically we were trying to come up with names for the podcast. We kind of suggested an audience with the Adamsons, but that felt kind of one-timey, like a single event kind of thing. So instead we thought, why don't we just take a topic, one per month, or however often we do this podcast, probably one per month is the plan, same with the film one, and we just find a topic and find whatever's going on in the world that's been quite current, and then just talk about it, and then just see where it goes from there. So this week, or maybe last week, was it last week or the week before?
Might have been the week before.
Week before. So obviously the Taliban have basically taken over Afghanistan again.
Which we're all delighted about.
Congratulations on your win. But what was interesting is that we all know the Taliban to be a bit fucking cunty. They're not a very nice bunch of people. They've
goat fucking barbarians, I think, is what you describe them as.
Yeah, they've been associated with some of the worst people ever. Al Qaeda, who committed some of the worst atrocities the Western world has ever seen. Although the Western world's committed some of the worst atrocities that the Eastern world's ever seen. It's a great game of tennis we have going.
Yeah, it's a really unpleasant game of tit for tat.
Anyway. We know them as like these goat fucking barbarians who are horrible, nasty people who basically persecute women and anyone who disagrees with them, and they're very harsh and horrible, and they're fundamentally mental. But what was weird about this? I don't know if any of the listeners saw this, but they went on their holidays. They went on their hollybobs, and they went to an abandoned amusement park, and they were just on like the Ferris wheels, and they were on the fucking, what's that one called where you sit on the swings and it lifts you up in it. Just fucks you around in the air for like 2 minutes.
I know what you mean, I don't know what it's called.
But then they all went on pedalos in this kind of lake or, sea or whatever, or big river, I don't know where it was. And there's a guy, they're all on pedalos, the Taliban, in their full army gear, body armour and all that shit.
They're slinging AK-47s and rocket-propelled grenades.
There's a guy holding an RPG on a fucking pedalo.
It looks like a really weird extra level on Call of Duty, doesn't it?
It does, so... Then what did you ask me to? I think I asked my mates what they thought of it, and then you told me to ask them what would be the best.
Well, the thing is, I think we were trying to cast around a little bit for what their motivations might be, and we wondered if maybe this was them training for a seaborne invasion.
You said what holiday accessory is best for mounting a seaborne invasion.
Yeah, because obviously, you know, we're not quite sure what they're up to. I mean, this might be a very flawed plan, not least because Afghanistan is a landlocked country, but perhaps they are talking about seaborne invasions, and they are, you know, coming for us any minute now. Nigel Farage is standing there on the coast, wanking himself off, saying that terrorists are coming over the water. Maybe this is the Taliban's plan, and they're getting ready for a seaborne invasion in pedalos. And we thought, well, is a pedalo the right vehicle? Could they perhaps be, you know, going down the wrong track? Because they're a bit, you know, they don't really get you that far. Perhaps Lilos would be a better.
Well, this is what I asked. So, you said, what holiday accessory is best for mounting a seaborne invasion? Pedalo versus Lilo. And I just said, it's definitely the fastest holiday accessory. So I said, someone's mother on cocaine. And then my mate Rory said, if I'm on a Lilo, do I get a propulsion method or am I at the whim of the tide? And then I assumed that you were going to say whim of the tide, but you said, he's allowed to inflate the Lilo with a gas that could be used for propulsion, especially if to do so would be highly dangerous. And Rory said, well, this changes things. I'm taking a hydrogen-filled Lilo and suicide bombing the insert tiger target. And he said, the Hindenburg Lilo.
Oh, the humanity. Because the other thing he said was that he came up with some pictures of Lilo. It was like a life-size or near-life-sized Taj Mahal Lilo. You could get a lot of Taliban on there, and you could get a lot of propellant inside that Lilo, which perhaps gives it the edge over a pedalo if you wanted to get across the English Channel and launch your invasion of the United Kingdom.
Could you imagine? Oh, all the guys that, you know, sit in pubs saying, I'd fucking batter the Taliban, I'd fucking give me a pint of Stella and give me something that isn't my missus to fucking punch, I'd fucking batter those fucking Quran shaggers.
All the presenters on the news channel GB News be going, we will fight them on the beaches. Oh no, you will fight them on the beaches. I'll be hiding behind this desk just giving you moral support. This is, yeah, I mean, so I think it could be that. It has been speculated that actually this is a whole promotional effort. They're actually trying to soften their image because they want to try and explain that this is the new modern Taliban and that they're a lot more fun than the original guys who were taken over Afghanistan, you know, 25 years ago and did all that damage. And the sight of them playing in the fun fair and knocking about with their mates in the gym and going on pedalos is all their idea of showing the world their fun, softer, gentler side, even though they are holding rocket-propelled grenades while they do it.
So no one told you life was gonna be this way. Allahu Akbar.
Well, what I would like to see is I would like to see a montage of this, like, fun Taliban day out to the tune of My Lovely Horse by Father Ted and Father Dougal.
Oh, imagine.
Just to see what it would be like.
Those Shiites, up to no good as usual. Fuck me.
You're a fundamentalist now, Father.
It makes you think, because have you noticed recently the news has been really distracted from COVID? Now, that was a big one. I mean, another thing about the Taliban is that, did you see that fucking dumb prick who, he was from the UK and he thought, oh, I'll go on holiday to Afghanistan. But what his logic was is that he saw the Taliban had started garnering, you know, a big
maybe
force.
He saw these pedalos and thought it would like a really nice place to go on holiday.
Maybe he saw them on the pedalos and thought they'll take fucking ages to get through a landlocked country on those. Yeah. Anyway, that's a side point. He went, I've always wanted to see
Afghanistan.
And he said, oh, well, it'll take them months to conquer, you know, Afghanistan. 2 months, maybe a month tops.
So I'll just pop in before that. I think
literally, and they conquered they conquered Afghanistan in about a week, in about 2 weeks.
I mean,
what a fucking clown.
Well, I think he was like a student, wasn't he? And this was his idea of an edgy holiday, and it was going to be a little tale to tell his mates down the student bar. Just, oh yeah, I went on holiday to Afghanistan. And he made the mistake of listening to Foreign Secretary Dominic Raab's insightful assessment of the war in Afghanistan. I mean, if you take Dominic Raab's advice on anything, you deserve everything you get. But obviously, when he said that it was going to take the Taliban weeks to invade, to take Kabul, he didn't realise it was actually going to take days. Nonetheless, prior to that, Afghanistan wasn't really known as a great holiday destination. And even when someone says, oh, the Taliban won't actually be here for weeks, I wouldn't be booking flights.
Yeah, I mean,
I wouldn't be looking on Expedia for like flight and hotel options.
That's a hard sell on lastminute.com.
Fucking hell, man.
We can get you airdropped into Kabul and you can stay in a cave.
Yeah, what about the return flight? Return flight? We're not sure.
You'd be going through paradise, mate.
Have you seen Midnight Express?
Oh, man. But have you noticed that the news is getting away from COVID? I mean, the big news this week is obviously the world's run out of... Well, not the world. Britain's run out of fucking petrol.
Well, the thing is, Britain wasn't running out of petrol, but then when some stories were BBC circulated...
BBC News, they have to take the responsibility for it. It was them. Yeah. They're fucking clowns.
Yeah, they announced it, and then everyone went panic buying petrol, and now we've run out of fuel. Which just goes to show how stupid people are. So if the Taliban think that these pedalo pictures are going to, like, fool us into thinking... That they're actually great. They must have some idea that we're really stupid and easily fooled, and I've got no idea where they got that impression from.
Well, see, to be fair, you see the... I don't know how true this is. They executed these kidnappers.
No, I didn't know that.
Because they're bringing back the whole amputation execution thing.
Hmm.
Which, right? Now, hear me out. I'm not saying that the Taliban are okay, but I understand. You know, I'm not saying that as long as the law's fair, you know, kidnappers are bad people. They can't kidnap people if they've not got any hands or they've been shot in the head. Why don't we start doing that for, like, paedophiles and stuff like that?
I mean, the impulse to impose that kind of rough justice on people is understandable, shall we say.
Yeah, fucking
but
send them back.
The example of what kind of people are willing to impose such a regime should always be taken into account. So, oh, yeah, we should have the people in charge who would do that. And you go, really? Because they don't let you fly kites either.
Do they not?
No, kite flying's illegal in Afghanistan now.
Is that what that film's about? A kite runner?
Sort of, yeah. Although, actually, when you see the kind of kite flying they used to do, I can sort of see why they'd want to outlaw that, because it was bloody dangerous. But
were they doing it with, like, a B-52 or something?
They were doing it with razor-sharp lines, and the idea was that you try and attack each other's kites. It looks quite cool, right? Because what you do is you have razor-sharp lines on your kites, and you go swooping down and trying to sever the line on your opponent's kite. And it's like Conker's 50 feet in the air. But obviously it's quite dangerous, because if someone sort of, you know, goes running and drops it, then someone's actually going to get, you know, clotheslined with razor-sharp wire, which would obviously only happen if you're not being Islamic enough, not by accident. So they outlawed that. But they also outlawed music and basically anything that's remotely fun or enjoyable about life.
Oh.
Which is no surprise. Obviously, it's the Taliban. I mean, when you know, they don't like good things to happen to people.
What did you expect? Although, to be fair, they didn't vote for them, did they? That's the thing. They didn't vote for them. I feel bad for the Afghan people. They've been through a lot.
No, I mean, bombs. The Afghanistan was sort of a modernizing country in the 60s and early 70s. And then... what happened was there was a bit of a dispute. There was a socialist government got in, and then the Soviet Union decided if they've got a leftist government, we should support it. And then when that socialist government fell, they sent in the troops, and the Americans went, oh, you know how we've just been really embarrassed by spending 10 years in Vietnam? Maybe we could get the Soviet Union to be really embarrassed by spending 10 years in Afghanistan and losing badly. So they started pumping money and weapons into the area, and they pumped $3 billion worth of money, weapons and various other materials, plus whatever the Saudis were going to pump in there. They exported fundamentalist doctrine and fundamentalist fighters into Afghanistan, and the place got razed to the ground. And anyone who wasn't a goat-fucking-barbarian had no chance of ruling the place, which we're still living with the consequences of that today, which is nice.
Yeah, I mean, as soon as you start fucking about, and those Middle Eastern countries are fucking mental. As soon as you start fucking about over there, it's all gone peak on. Russia couldn't do it. We couldn't do it. It's been going on for fucking hundreds of years. Just fucking leave them alone. Now you've given them guns. That's the problem. We gave the fucking Taliban guns.
Yeah, we gave them more guns than anyone else. Which, and what they immediately did with those guns was to take control of all the regions that they could, and take control of the very lucrative heroin trade.
Yes, smack, 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 smack.
You know, it just makes it impossible for anyone else to run the country, because, you know, democracies take years and years and years to set up. Dictatorships take 5 minutes to set up, as long as you've got money, guns and drugs. Which sounds more fun than it is.
Yeah, it's not fun. I imagine it's fun in Amsterdam. It's not fun in Kabul.
Yeah.
Yeah,
they only sell it over there. They don't let anyone take it and have a good time. But yeah, it's just one of, there's just so many places that it's completely fucked up, and it's been fucked up for a very long time. And when you see them on going on holiday boats with RPGs, it just kind of sums it up, really. It's, what a crazy place.
But have you noticed that it's weird how news is getting back to news again?
I think people are almost desperate for something that's not COVID.
Yeah, like it's, you know, back before, because it's literally been nothing but death, cases, vaccine, open, shut, lockdown, blah, for the past fucking 18 months. And now it's like, you know, we've run out of petrol. We've got the Taliban kicking about again.
No HGV drivers.
Apparently, if you can put up with the fucking shitty conditions, you can get paid a fuckload to drive a lorry. I'd do it for a year. Get paid, some of them are getting paid, offered fucking 80 grand.
Yeah, that's what some people are saying. It's just the conditions are really grim, and that's why a lot of people haven't done it. But now some people might go back to it for the money.
Mate, if I could get paid 80k, and then say after tax, a bit less than that, I don't know how much it would be, say, 40k for a year of just driving, I'd do it.
Yeah.
Just driving a fucking lorry. It'd be shit for a year, you know, sleeping in your car, but think of the fucking money. And I think that's the idea. It should have never come to this, because you read about the how good the conditions are over in Europe, the motorways in France, and obviously Germany. Germany's motorways have a complex history, don't they? You know, they're great, but why are they great?
Yes, who built that?
Yeah. We don't talk about him. He's gone. But yeah, back to the point, that in Europe, which seems weird to me, because there's so many things in Europe that you'd expect a country to be shit at. Do you know what I thought? Do you know, when I went to Italy and I went with my cousin and we went across Italy on the trains,
yeah.
I thought, fuck me, these trains are going to be shit, aren't they, if they don't know how to do anything. You know, they're just in debt. They're only good at cooking and doing fuck all. And their trains are fucking incredible. Do you know how cheap your trains are in Italy? It's ridiculous. You can go from Pisa to Florence and from Rome to Pisa and stuff like that for pennies, man.
Every other country, even America's trains, they're slow, but they're cheap and they're quite comfortable. And all Europe's trains are miles better than British trains.
Look at Japan's trains.
Oh, fucking hell. I mean, then you're just talking about, it's like science fiction over there. It's ridiculous. We can't even get, can you imagine trying to explain the concept of a bus replacement service to someone who runs the trains in Japan? He'd be sitting there going, you what?
He would genuinely disembowel himself.
He would rather use the Taliban pedalos than a bus replacement service on his line. Can you imagine it? that should actually be the law, shouldn't it? When the trains don't run properly, it should be a pedalo replacement service.
It should be the cunt that runs Network Rail who has to carry every single person that would be on that train
on a piggyback
back,
yes,
until his fucking discs slip.
I think it's a welcome change in news, because I mean, in 2020 it was even worse, because the news was either Trump or COVID, and what a mess Trump was making of COVID. And it was just, I mean, I don't know, you probably don't, but I used to watch some of these current affairs entertainment shows. There's a lot of the American ones, like The Daily Show and Bill Maher and John Oliver. But they were a fucking chore to watch throughout 2020, because there was only one subject. No one was going out and doing anything. So the question was, is COVID still shit? Yes. Is Trump still a fascist cunt? Yes. And you just think, I can't keep listening to this. I'm going to watch The Terminator again. Do you know what I mean? And it's now that there is something else in the news, people are just kind of, I think, keen on it. That's why the media jumped on it, to have a story other than the fuel shortage. It was just to have a story other than COVID, you know? And that's what the media does. Once a story breaks, everyone talks about that story, and you know, it's kind of random. There's actually 100 other things that happened that day, but the media always only ever seems to be talking about the one thing, right?
Yeah.
So there was a phone-in about the fuel shortage, and then it was like, you know, get on social media and tell us what's happening at your petrol station. Here's a photograph of panic buying at the local petrol station. There was people, there was a video of a woman filling plastic bags with petrol at the petrol station.
Oh, the fucking clipping out! Did you see the fucking cunt who opened the back of his lorry and got that massive container? That's literally, I don't even know how to describe it.
No, I didn't see that.
Beach. It's like you see, I swear you see them at the beach, those big white containers with kind of light black lines kind of running on them. That sounds stupid, light black. But you stay with me. And it's they've got lines running across them, kind of cross sections. And he's literally filling it. And look, it must be 1,000 liters. It's ridiculous. Now somebody said that it's not illegal for people who are filling up on diesel or have a specific license for it.
Mm-hmm.
But
Yeah, I mean, he could empty a petrol station by himself, couldn't he?
Like, yesterday morning, I started work at 5 a.m, so luckily, one of the managers, after I'd clocked in, sorry, work, if you're listening, he said, look, there's petrol across the road, because there's places running out of petrol. I went to the BP, just on Great Western Road, which is in Glasgow, so I'm pretty sure every city has a Great Western Road, but BP, but they only had that fucking ultimate shit.
Yeah, which is basically much more expensive, and
so it's not 90.
And you only notice the difference if you're in a fucking supercar, you know.
It's 99 octane, so it was like 160 pence a litre. So I said to my girlfriend, I was like, look, I'm only putting 20 quid in here. I'm not fucking about with this shit. And then the Esso, that just across the road, had petrol, 135 pence a litre, which is still far too much, but it's cheaper, so just absolutely filled my tank. But I needed to fill my tank. My tank was like at a quarter. These folk are going here when they don't need to, and they're filling up jerry cans after jerry cans.
Yeah, it's nonsense.
We were at my girlfriend's sister's yesterday. They'd gone to Asda. They've just had to cap it. They've just capped it at 30 quid a litre. Not a litre, 30 quid.
30 quid like, a purchase, quid a litre. Yeah.
That'll be it in 2023. That's how much it'll be. But 30 quid, then that's it. That's your lot. Which is how it's going to have to be now, because fucking selfish cuts. And this is the same thing that happened at the start of the pandemic. For those listening, we didn't really properly introduce ourselves. I'm James Adamson, that's my dad, who's also called James Adamson, because we're not very inventive this side of the family.
Yeah, sorry about that.
If you go back six generations, there's only one male member on the side of the family that isn't called James Adamson, so
it's just a thing. I don't even know why it happens.
And it's my granddad, so but yeah, and I live in Glasgow, and my dad lives down in do you want me to say? You live down in the London area.
Yeah.
And so I live up here. I'm working in a supermarket right now. So I've been working at the supermarket for 4 years. So I've worked through the start of the pandemic. And it started that when the pasta thing was going on, and the toilet roll thing was going on. And we were making, like, we project our sales for the week. So if you're in a busier store, you'll be making more, obviously, etc. But they like to project it to kind of see, like, your busier days and who's working what days. We were making, like, so say on a maybe Tuesday. Today's Tuesday. Tuesday's a little bit quieter. So say we're projected to make £35,000 for that day. We were making an extra 14K on top of that. There was fuck all on the shelves. People were buying fucking everything. And the deliveries we got in, we had to limit it to 2 packets of pasta per person and 1 thing of toilet. It was like, what's going on? People don't eat that much pasta, but what was happening was the delivery would come in and we'd leave the pallet on the shop floor. It comes in like cling film. We took the cling film off and just said, have at it. We didn't have to put it on the shelf, and they're like fucking vultures. It's like the scene in The Wizard of Oz and the monkeys just start tearing the scarecrow apart.
Yeah.
It was like that, just with pasta, like, fusilli and ravioli.
We're never that far from a film reference, even on our non-film podcast. Listeners, yeah, it's crazy. But that, I mean, that one as well. The toilet roll one was especially stupid because people were panic buying toilet roll in Australia, because at the start of the COVID outbreak and everything shut down from China. They didn't know what was safe to shift. You know, if it was safe to move people, it was safe to move goods. So everything shut down, and Australia gets its toilet roll from China, because you look where Australia is on a map, it's right
down the road, isn't it?
Yeah, Asia is going to be one of its principal kind of trade routes, and because people put that on social media, other people were going, oh, we better go and get toilet rolls. Says, we don't get our toilet roll from fucking China, do we? Look what toilet paper is made of. Paper. What are our big sort? Where does, you know, what's paper going on? Trees. Where are the big forests in that would be serving someone like us? Probably Norway. Right? Not the same thing, but everyone's fucking panic buying toilet roll because people are fucking stupid, basically.
I think the toilet roll we sell is made in Britain, but that's besides the point. The problem was is that the government did fuck all to coordinate that.
No.
What they should have done was is that if they're saying, right, if you guys are panic buying, we're just going to fully shut down the country for 4 weeks and get rid of COVID, which is what they should have done to begin with. Say, right, okay, you fucking raid these supermarkets. The supermarkets are now going to have 4 weeks off, where unless it's an absolute emergency and we get the fucking, I don't know, the military involved. I don't know.
I don't know quite what the logistics would involve. Yeah, but the government could have been a lot more stringent on that.
That's the thing. If people are panic buying because they think, okay, we're going to be shut up, like shut inside, like, then okay, you know, buy your 4 bags of pasta to last you those 4 weeks, because no one's eating that much fucking pasta. And to be honest, see, when I make pasta, I don't buy the fucking, you know, bag of dried shit. I try and go, you know, nice and try and make, you know, get the kind of good shit. You know, the fresh egg, especially. Was it Taste the Difference, you know, tortelloni and stuff like that. You know, you don't make pasta like, because that's, it's the end of the world, and what you want is shitty pasta. I just didn't get it. And COVID has never been renowned as a disease. I know there's been new variants where diarrhea has been one of the symptoms, but, you know, it wasn't a disease where, you know, you had to wipe your arse. If it was fucking inhalers being stockpiled, or you could buy a ventilator in a supermarket, okay, yeah, I understand what you're stockpiling for. And it's the same thing with this petrol thing. See, if the panic didn't start, there wouldn't have been...
So the thing is, the panic buying is made up of people going... People start to panic, and then other people go, shit, well, if they're panic buying, I'm not going to be able to get fuel, so I better go and get fuel now. Do you know what I mean? Which then increases the cycle. And again, it's just about... If people were a little tougher on it, you would see the difference. Like, when people are stockpiling toilet roll or panic buying pasta, they should have just simply said, if someone gets to the till and their trolley is full of nothing but toilet roll, they just chuck them out of the supermarket and put those toilet rolls back on the shelf. Or just chuck everyone out of the supermarket and shut it for an hour and said, that's what you're going to do, we're not opening. And the same thing with the petrol. If they come in and say that anyone with jerry cans, you're just being ejected, you're being thrown off. You know, you don't have that many lawnmowers that you need to fill with fuel, mate, so I don't know what those jerry cans are for. Fuck off. But over here, we have this kind of weird mixture of stepping in and saying, you know, no more than six people in a park, we're going to enforce. But these other things, which are just as bad, we're totally powerless to stop that. So we're kind of really invasive in some areas and then just really shit and powerless in others. But yeah, they could have just cracked down on this panic buying in a minute.
Well, yeah.
People need to be less stupid as well, for fuck's sake.
I did feel for some people. Like, it did get a bit out of hand with some of the policies that we had to bring in as a supermarket. Because the supermarkets, you know, fair play to them, you know, they've never had to deal with a situation like this. Some people might think that they didn't give a shit about their employees' well-being. I'm not going to get into that. But, you know, they're trying to come up with new ways to deal with these kind of circumstances. And, you know, they had to limit things to 4 items per customer. But there are some things that you need more than 4 items of, if you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So we have some loose stuff which you could put through the till. Like, you could, if someone bought a bunch of bananas and it was 6 loose bananas, okay, fair enough, you know, I'm not going to limit you to only take 4.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, sometimes, you know, if you're doing like a big weekly shop, you know, say you're like a family of 5, you know, 1 packet of cold meat doesn't do you. It's only 5 slices.
Yeah.
But that means, and that was encouraging people to do the opposite of what they're meant to be doing and staying inside, because they're having to come into a shop more than once.
More often.
To buy their supplies as opposed to just letting them buy. But the problem was that the selfish people at the start had...
The hardest bit they always say is how do you change things so that this one small group of arseholes don't ruin it for everybody else.
That's what it comes down to because that
panic is started by a few people being arseholes.
But it's not even one small group of arseholes. What happens is that one small group of arseholes, for example, starts stockpiling the fuel, and then everyone's kind of like, well, fuck, I'm on half a tank now, but say in 2 weeks' time there's no fuel, and then people are now thinking to themselves, shit, all the people have now taken the fuel, so now I'm going to have to go and get fuel. And it's just like a big kind of tight...
Yeah, it snowballs, doesn't it?
Because one of the managers at work, she literally, like, I saw her run, because I got to work like 2 minutes after her, she came running out in the piss and rain, saying, I need to get fuel.
I'm empty.
She's not empty, but she stays like a good... She's a good fair drive. She's, you know, outside of Glasgow, she stays like kind of close to, think, Dumbarton and stuff like that, which is a fair drive. And she said, I'm not going to make 2 days. So she just ran out and ran and drove over to the petrol station. But yeah, that's what happens. It's a snowball effect. And then we had to open up at 7:30 for the elderly and the infirm, because it was to keep them away from everyone, but also give them a chance to actually buy things, because, you know, old people weren't able to buy all their supplies and stuff like this. And it's weird how mental people get when they didn't need to. I know you have to take what the government says with a pinch of salt, because they're all fucking paedophiles, but they came out and said, look, the reason there's a lack of fuel in places or having to fucking shut down is because people are just panic buying, which is true. You know, if we just kept it the way it was going, it's not actually a petrol shortage. There's not a lot of drivers, but the places are coping. They were coping just fine, and then people hear that headline in the news and go, oh shit, here we go. And then that was it. It was fucked.
Yeah. It's very hard for people to kind of listen and trust the government at the moment, isn't there? Because they're in the habit of saying, oh, there's no problem. Everything's fine. So the minute this government says everything's fine, you think...
See, to be fair, and that's the problem, that everything was fine with the fuel.
Yes, it I know. It's the opposite of the boy who cried wolf. It's the, you know...
Literally, isn't it? It's just... It's...
Imagine if the story of the boy who cried wolf was that three or four times in a row, this straw-haired cunt called Boris was watching the sheep, and even though there were like 10 bodies of dead sheep and wolf hair everywhere, and people heard wolves howling in the night, and oh, there's no wolves, everything's fine, we haven't lost a single sheep. And then on the third night, when he said there's no wolves, people didn't believe him because he'd been such a lying arsehole before.
Yeah, that's the
story I read to my kids.
Dad, can you read the story about the three blind mice? No, there's this blonde cunt called Boris. not that one again.
It is definitely true that you heard some swear words and then used them yourself at a far earlier age than was appropriate.
Yeah, but thing is, do you know what's the beauty of it? Is that I have a Scottish mother. I suppose you're like half Scottish.
I'm half Scottish, but I sound like this.
So, sound like this, like it's a fucking condition.
I'm really fucking sorry I sound like this.
I can only fucking apologise. Yeah, so anyway, but what would happen was, I'd pick up swear words from you, but I'd also pick up swear words from mum, but I'd swear in my mum's accent. I used to have like a really kind of East End Cockney accent.
It was really easy to tell whose fault it was, because if you said it in a Scottish accent, it was your mother's fault, and if you said it in an English accent, it was my fault.
Yeah, basically.
There was a great one. I think I'd been like hurling some choice words at a bus driver because he was going around corners like he was Ayrton Senna when I was trying to manoeuvre you off the bus without you losing all your teeth. And you'd obviously heard me say whatever I'd said to the bus driver that day. And a couple of weeks later, we were waiting to cross the road. Now, I think anyone with kids knows you don't say to kids you always wait for the green man to come on before you cross the road. Unless the road's clear, then do what you like. As far as kids are concerned, the rule is the rule. So we were standing there, we were waiting, and there was nothing coming, but because I was with you and you were about five or something, we were waiting for the green man no matter what. But some other people were just walking across the road without waiting. And he said, "Oh, Dad, look at those people. They're not sensible. They're not waiting for the green man before they cross the road." And I went, "That's right, James, they're not very sensible." And he goes, "They're just twats," you said. And I went... Oh.
Arm goes round the shoulder. Before we get back to your mum,
yeah. The thing was, you'd used the word correctly in a sentence, and you made a valid point about road safety. So I couldn't really criticise you for what you'd done.
And to be honest, the swearing my mum can fucking come out with. There's a good few swearing stories, but the best example of who would get in trouble parent wise was the one where I was playing along and I was playing along my exercise, like, "Look at me, daddy, look at me playing," and you're like, "Oh yeah, all that bullshit," and then I dropped something and I went out from my little Cockney accent and just went, "Oh, for fuck's sake."
It was the one where you'd been driving with your auntie. And
my auntie invented it, basically. The best thing, she doesn't swear very often. Sorry, carry on. She doesn't swear very often, but when she does, whoo!
It was great, because obviously you've been cut up at a roundabout or something, and then, you know, whatever the incident had been, you came into the room with your auntie, who'd been giving you a lift, and you said, "Auntie," I won't say her name, because, you know, she hasn't given her permission, because the guy at that roundabout was a fucking idiot. Kids swearing is one of my favourite things in the whole world. It's not right, and obviously I've got an 18-month-old now, your brother, and it's only a matter of time before it comes out, the swear word, and it will be my fault.
I don't know. I don't know. It depends what swear word he uses.
Yeah, it's just he's just at that stage where he is actually listening to what you're saying and mimicking it and saying it, and I'm just thinking, I'm not going to be able to control myself. There'll be something on the TV, a really bad football result, I won't be able to help myself, and then he'll go into nursery the next day and he'll call someone a cunt and there'll be phone calls. And he's got that little angelic face, but he won't get away with calling someone a cunt, because that's across the line, and I'll have to go in and explain myself.
Well, where was I yesterday? No, on Sunday. So I've newly got into a relationship with my girlfriend, so I'm still kind of meeting her family. We met her auntie, who she looks remarkably like, actually. But she's got, her and her partner have five kids, and he has two kids from a previous relationship.
Yeah.
And there's one called Lewis, and he's really bright. He's really smart. and he's only 14, but I thought he was a bit younger. He looks quite young. I think that's kind of tends to be the thing with kids, like guys, boys that age especially. But he just starts talking about religion. He's like, that's why Buddhism's the best best religion. And he just comes out with, Christianity's fucked, man. Like, Christianity's just pure fucked. And I was like, where did this come from?
That's the thing, because kids will just come out with the topic, won't they? They won't kind of segue in from whatever other people were talking about.
But it's bright as anything, though. It was bright as anything, but it completely caught me off guard with it when he just swore like that.
Yeah. What one of the best places for seeing kids swearing is at football matches. It's just always beautiful when you see it. Especially if you can see a kid who's obviously decided to copy what everyone else is doing. You can see his face contorted with anger and he's swearing at an opposition player. Or small children giving the wanker sign to a footballer.
I did that at my first Sunderland game, didn't I? Yeah. Oh, and to add to the weirdness of this family, neither of us sound like we're from Sunderland, but we support Sunderland.
Yeah, I was born in Sunderland, I just never got the hang of the accent.
And I inherited the fucking misery.
Yeah, it's good for you, it's character building.
Well, the thing is, right, the thing that annoys me more than anything about this, right? Not that it's not character building, because see, most of my pals support good teams. My best mate, Rory, he's a Rangers fan, so he's had some ropey past few years, but they've just won a title, so they're back to being better at football. And then my other pal Bruce, he's an Arsenal fan, so ropey kind of few years, but again, he's seen them win.
You got to put these things in perspective,
haven't you? Yeah. So they'll be like, Arsenal lost 3-1 to Man City the weekend. I was like, mate, I'm watching us lose 1-0 to Burton fucking Albion. Like, let's get some fucking content. But anyway, back more to about like you always follow your dad's team. I mean, sometimes down here you don't. Like, you get, it's weird down here, up here I suppose. You get dads that are Celtic and sons that are Rangers. It's just weird. But
that's got to be a new phenomenon because you don't change your religion, do you?
Well, no, that is the thing. I won't say who, but Rory's girlfriend's cousin plays for Celtic.
Mm-hmm.
And him and his dad are the only two Celtic folk in that side of the family that are all Rangers fan. So I don't know who decided that they were going to be Celtic, but that's just the way it is. So, but anyway, more to the point about character building and being a Sunderland fan. What's happened is that I'm more engaged with Sunderland now than I say you are. I say that you used to really be in Sunderland back in like the kind of Peter Reid era when we weren't total fucking wank. And then more recently, I don't know if you've just kind of given up on them, which I don't not to particularly blame you, because I can understand, like, it's been miserable, and I can, like, a lot of fans have been disillusioned that, you know, why would I pay attention to that shite, but I've still kind of kept in touch, and you know what that's like you've given me, it's like
I've handed it to you and then walked away. Like, can I just leave this with you, mate?
It's like I was born with HIV that I got from you, and then you found the cure. You found the cure and not fucking told me about it. That's what it's like.
That's a dark analogy. Mate. Surely the only football team to support that's comparable to having HIV is Newcastle United.
Oh, no. Dark analogy, but it's been dark times. I've watched Jack Rodwell play football.
Have you?
Yeah, and to be honest,
I thought, have HIV. Can you call what he did playing football?
He somehow managed to vanish out of thin air. He was the Maddy McCann of footballers. What, too jazzy? Too jazzy?
Yeah. They're still talking years later about who's to blame
for Jack Rodwell. Maybe I should use HIV. It's like inheriting your dad's male pattern baldness, and he finds that he goes to Turkey.
I go and get a hair transplant, yeah.
Yeah, he goes to Turkey and gets his hair transplant and his teeth done, and I'm sat there looking like Monty fucking Burns.
To be honest, I do follow the results and stuff, but it is just hard to kind of justify. Like, it's like saying, well, we're gonna go for a big day out to watch the match, and then you come home and you're like, oh, it was terrible. Oh, what a bad day. They're absolutely rubbish. You need to get rid of the manager. And then your wife says, why do you do it?
Literally.
And you can't come up with a good answer.
It's literally eat, sleep, and watch some of them repeat kind of thing. It's eat, sleep, lose, repeat, basically, is what it's been with someone. And it's four seasons in League One. So as much as I love them, and I always love them, and your team, you never stop supporting your team. I firmly believe you can have a Scottish team, you can have an English team. I don't mind that. And your main team's always your team. But, I don't fully blame you for wanting
to. It's just there's like 40-odd games in a season. That's a lot of weekends that can be ruined by, like, incompetent people.
Did you see that guy, the Sunderland fan? He was like this super old Sunderland fan. He was like 88 years old, and they got given like an honour. I don't know if it was something like the Freedom of the City, but he was like, you're honoured by the club, etc. And they asked him, what's it like supporting son? You know, do you like going to the games? And he goes, not really, it ruins your weekend.
Like, you know, I can't blame him.
You just saw like fucking 88 years of misery in that boy's fucking face. He was just like, you know what, I can't be fucked with this anymore.
He was actually only 45.
You'd only watched this since we were in the prep.
That's right, yeah. No, it's a strange phenomenon, the whole football supporting thing. It's a very it's a very kind of tribalist thing, and it's, if you read any of, like, Nick Hornby's very good on this, because he essentially says that the normal state for a football fan is frustration, because even if your team wins, like, it's still out of 90 minutes, the win, the goal and the good play is like a small amount of it, and the rest of it is a ball going over the bar or a scruffy miss pass and everything else, that most of the time you're actually quite frustrated watching football.
Yeah, it's weird. I've never understood, because the only two teams I've watched, three teams, I suppose, is that I've lived in Aberdeen, so I went to a couple of Aberdeen games, and I've been to one game at Ibrox, because it's kind of a goal of mine to go to all like the big stadiums in Britain, so Ibrox is one of them. I'm going to try to go to Parkhead. I've been to Hampden, but the only teams I've ever seen play is Ibrox when Rangers were still in the Championship and they had Kenny Miller and Martin Waghorn. I've watched Aberdeen with their 1,500 managers, and they've never been very good. Sunderland and Scotland. So, shite Rangers, Aberdeen, Sunderland, Scotland. I went to my first Scotland game actually quite recently. The first international game back, managed to get two tickets to the Scotland-Moldova game. Finished 1-0. And my God, that was fucking rubbish. Oh. See, to be fair, we should have scored about 17, because Moldova are fucking shite. And then my girlfriend was like, oh, I've got tickets for the Denmark game. I was like, why'd you get tickets for them? Denmark are fucking incredible. They're going to fucking batter us. But yeah, it's weird. As a football fan supporting Sunderland, it's kind of that...
Yeah, when you get to see good players on the field, it's usually to watch them absolutely hammering your team.
Thing is, the best thing about it isn't even that, is that it's great watching Sunderland win. I've only been, because of where I've lived, I've never actually lived in Sunderland. I've only been to maybe, I'd say 30 live games tops, maybe 35. And I've seen us win, I think, about 8 of them in the stadium.
It's terrible, isn't it?
Like, there's so much to this that we could get into. So let me finish this point. The best thing about Sunderland is that, you know, it's always the what if. What if we stop being shite? And I've watched this shite team through thick and thin, and I've watched us be really bad, and now we're now back in the Prem. We've managed to get into the Europa League because we won the League Cup, which would have been our first trophy since you were a fucking sperm. You were like a month old when we last won a trophy. That's how miserable it is, being a Sunderland fan. But that's the kind of best about it.
We won the EFL trophy, or whatever it's called.
Oh, the Papa John's trophy.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's the best thing about it. It's like the what if, you know, because it must be, not boring, but you know, you have to find other things to enjoy if you're a Man City or a Chelsea fan, because you're always fucking winning everything. Like, I bet it's great winning the European Cup and or the Champions League and stuff like that. But for some of them, imagine us doing something and winning. Like,
the nearest thing to kind of imagining what that's like was what it was like for Leicester fans to win the league.
Literally, that's it.
Because to be fair, they were already like a Premiership team. They were already a decent Premiership team.
No, they weren't.
But they've been up, what, it was their second season, third season, something like that?
No. The season before was their first season up, and they went on that run with Nigel Pearson.
They
were 19 points in April and somehow managed to stay up before we did, because they just went on a run where they beat fucking, like, Esteban Cambiaso fucking scored a worldie against Man United. But
and then that was it. The whole experience for them of a team like that winning the league, it used to happen more often back in the days when, like, Forest and Derby and people like that, and
when there wasn't as much
QPR
money,
and other people like that had a realistic chance of winning the title. And then for Leicester to win it was that surreal feeling. You had fans doing, oh, I put my usual £5 bet on at the start of the season for us to win the league.
£25,000.
And it was like 5,000 to 1. And what would happen was the bookies would contact them with like 10 games to go, offering a payout now. Like, because the bookies are obviously trying to minimise their losses, right? And there are people going, I know we're 8 points clear, but can we hold out? I don't know. And then having Andrea Bocelli turning up singing at the party afterwards that they've won the league, and what a surreal feeling. That's that's what it would be like for anyone else. I don't care what these fans and Man United fans are, that they always go to the cup final and they talk about what they won or lost afterwards and try and sound like real football fans, but it's really hard for them to do that because you win everything. You've got the best players in the world. You've won the Champions League and the title in recent memory. I don't even know what that's like. I have found myself, you know, looking forward to the day out and a few drinks with mates far more than the actual game. And I just hoping we get the game over with, you know. And I just don't understand what it would be like for someone like Man City, where you just know you're going to win a trophy this year. Even if it's only the Charity Shield or only the Super Cup.
Yeah, like, I mean, City, it'll be City and Chelsea again. I know City beat Chelsea the weekend, but it'll be City or Chelsea for the league again. And for those kind of fans, to be fair, you'll have City fans who supported them back in like the 80s and 90s when they got relegated and stuff and they were fucking shit. And it must be so satisfying for them now that they've now kind of got that stability and a legacy and luckily got taken over. And luckily we've been taken over by a guy who's young and seems fresh ideas and he's got money, which is good. But
it's going to take time, isn't it?
Yeah, hopefully we can fucking get back to the Prem one day. But, you know, I'm enjoying some of them regardless. You know, you always.
I'm enjoying it more now. I'm enjoying it more now because actually the manager seems to have us playing positive football. He's got some young players who look like they really care. Even if they go back to their parent club next season, or you know, one day they'll get bought by a bigger club. Just seeing young, hungry, like energetic lads who genuinely have talent turning out, and it's like, oh, so he made a mistake. He was great to watch apart from the mistake. That's like, I'm enjoying this. I'm enjoying this much more than some turgid fare with a load of fucking journeymen, you know, to just try and scrape our way out of this league. We're trying to play our way out of this league now, and it's much more enjoyable.
Yeah, not to say we're becoming a football podcast, the kind of last thing I want to touch on about Sunderland, because it's not everyone's team.
To be fair, I think we should just sit back for a moment and remark upon the fact that we got from the Taliban on pedalos to the joys of watching Sunderland Football Club.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, quite a diversion.
I'd rather live under Sharia law than be a Sunderland fan. too jazzy.
Maybe we could merge the two and like have a game of water polo on pedalos against the Taliban.
They'd still fucking win.
Bailey Wright. Don't play Bailey Wright at centre back. The guy's got an RPG. Come on. Think, Johnson. Think.
Can we play them in Ramadan? When they're fucking starving.
Just go past them with like a hamburger as you're pedalling past.
Ooh, I've had bacon this morning, you cheeky cunt. You pesky fundamentalist. Anyway, final point about Sunderland is that my mate Rory, who is the Rangers fan, he's supported them all his life. He got proper big into football when he was probably about 18. Like I don't know what age he meant to be. I suppose that's kind of late. I probably started getting into football. Like, you go with your dad and then you get into it maybe when you're like 14, 15. He got into it when he was 18, but we went to a Sunderland game. I remember messaging him one time. I was like, mate, I'm off this Tuesday and I'm not until work at 2 p.m. on the Wednesday, so I can just drive down to you because I was staying in Aberdeen at the time, and we'll go to the Sunderland game and then we'll drive back to you. I'll stay at yours and drive up to Aberdeen the next day. And he was like, yeah, sound. Took him to see Barnsley, us play Barnsley, and we battered them 4-2 and played some incredible football. Aidan McGeady got like 2 goals and an assist, which is very difficult for only being a Rangers fan and Aidan McGeady being a wee bit of like a kind of Celtic legend. But he then subsequently became a Sunderland fan out of choice, like knowing how bad we were. He was like,
I find that very difficult to understand.
Yeah. So do I, but if you ever met Rory, you probably understand that, you know, he's not very orthodox. But anyway, he really enjoyed himself, and he's subsequently, since COVID's that kind of not died down a little bit, but, you know, everything's been a bit safer to open up, he went to the Wickham game and watched us win. So he's got 100% watching us win record at the stadium, and I must have, you know, about a 25% watching us win percentage.
He's stadium. Your lucky charm.
But anyway, there's a video I got for his Christmas. I got him a Sunderland top, and he was so, like, he had a bit of a teary face, and he was like, ooh, and I went, mate, you don't understand, like, how many people didn't want that shirt.
No, it's weird when people adopt a football club. It's happened a lot in America, because there are Americans. Yeah, and
sorry.
Or like going back before that, when like especially when the MSL started, and
the
people
MSL?
Were
getting the MLS.
Yeah, what's MSL? Something else. Yeah, when the MLS. Oh dear, when the MLS started, people who were going to be into football, you know, our kind of football, would look across the at the Premiership, because the Premiership's a global product, and kind of pick a club. There is one guy. He is a Sunderland fan, and he is an actor in Hollywood. He's not a particularly big name. His name is Jesse Birch. I'm not giving away any big secrets here. It's on his IMDb profile that he's a Sunderland fan. You probably recognise his voice if you listened really, really carefully, because he's done the voices for a lot of like video games like COD and things like that.
Okay.
And other than that, he does a lot of supporting roles. Yeah, you name an American TV show, he's guest appeared in an episode of it. And he's a Sunderland fan. He doesn't make the kind of money that means he could fly over and watch them every week. But he tunes it. He gets up. He's in California. He gets up at 5 o'clock in the morning so that he can watch the game. And I just think, I don't know how you do it. I do this because I was born with it, and I don't know what else to do. You know, I've got this thing in my life. there's nothing else that I can put in that compartment of my life. But people in it's the reason Tom Hanks is a Villa fan.
Is he?
Yeah. Because when he was,
what is that?
I think it's the same thing. Because prior to the MLS, there was the North American Soccer League, when all the old tired footballers from Europe and South America went and played there for the money. And Pelé was at New York Cosmos. And growing up, there was just a bit of interest in English football, and he adopted Aston Villa because he liked the sound of the name. And now he's a Villa fan.
Are there any other Americans that support like an English team? Sylvester Stallone's an Everton fan.
David Soul of Starsky and Hutch is an Arsenal season ticket holder, or was an Arsenal season ticket holder. Right. It's always a niche thing. It's the same thing basically as like British people following American sports teams, like who are really into the NFL and stuff.
Alright, okay.
They're the ones who will go to Wembley because they have one NFL game a year at Wembley, and you can watch the Philadelphia Eagles or whoever.
Oh yeah.
And you know, you have to be pretty dedicated. So someone who's into NFL in this country isn't a casual fan, are they? They'll become absolute fanatics.
2 a.m. kind of thing.
Yeah, to watch the Super Bowl and everything. Yeah. No, I think we've done the best we can with this subject. I think what we've learnt today is that the Taliban like to go on holiday just like everyone else does, and maybe we should envy them the fact that they can take their AK-47s on holiday with them, because I can't take a fucking pair of nail clippers on a plane.
Do you reckon they took a lateral flow before they went on their pedalo?
Oh, that would be good to know, wouldn't it?
Stop the spread.
They might be tough, but watch them cry for their mum when that Q-tip goes all the way up their nose.
Stop the spread of infidels.
Stop the spread of infidels. Is there a test for that? We'll find out. Okay, well, look, this was our inaugural episode of the Adamsons Versus. We'll be back soon where we take on another topic or another image and see where it takes us. But today, to recap, we covered the Taliban on pedalos, what the best form of holiday accessory is to carry out a seaborne invasion, the joys of being a football fan, especially a Sunderland fan, why people buy too much toilet paper and pasta, and why people buy those two things together remains a mystery. And next month, hopefully, we'll bring you some other great insights of some of the wild, weird things from the world.
Should we try and predict the most mental news headline of next month?
The most mental news headline for next month.
R. Kelly's going to kill himself.
Well, maybe he's going to kill himself, or maybe it'll be some other way. People panic buying R. Kelly CDs because they think they're going to be out of the shops.
My mind's telling me no, but my body is telling me yes.
Yeah.
Jail. Get in the jail, do ya, pedo?
No, basically, though, he'll be sharing a cell with Ghislaine Maxwell.
No, they'll be putting him in a cell with someone who's built like a brick shithouse like they did with Jeffrey Epstein. Have you seen that?
Did he have a really big, dangerous looking cellmate, did he?
Go. I want your live reaction on this for the podcast. Go to your Google and type in Nicholas Tartaglione. Tartaglione is probably how you pronounce it in Italian, but it's TARTAGLIONI, I think. It should probably come up for you. Look at the size of that cunt. Have you got the photo?
Yeah, he looks like...
Holy fuck.
Yeah, he looks like he's been photoshopped.
Genuinely, he's on the fucking juice. And he was Jeffrey Epstein's cellmate. And Jeffrey Epstein is a wee fucking weedy guy. And we're supposed to believe that guy was a former cop who got sent to jail for killing like fucking four people. I'm supposed to believe that didn't fucking kill Jeffrey Epstein, allegedly.
Yeah, it was very convenient for everything.
Someone's up to no good. And then when I saw Ghislaine Maxwell had COVID last year, I thought,
Will it be a fatal case of COVID?
But yeah, anyway, to cover, stop buying petrol, stop buying R. Kelly CDs, and keep on peddling.
But if it is a choice between petrol and R. Kelly CDs, go and buy the R. Kelly CDs, because then you won't be ahead of me in the queue. That's my advice.
And they'll be more fun to burn.
Listen, thank you very much for everyone for listening. I'm James Adamson. He's James Adamson. This was the Adamsons versus the Taliban on Pedalos. Next time it'll be the Adamsons versus something else.
Bye!
The Adamsons versus featured James Adamson and James Adamson. You can also see us on the Double Reel Film Podcast. The music was District 4 by Kevin MacLeod.